It's your girl Evie in the building. Welcome to Evolve by Evie series, where we will be talking about breaking stigmas and the importance of survival, healing, and growing through pain.
Care if I was gone. I didn't think anybody would even notice.
I remember thinking that my kids would be better off if I wasn't here.
I think I just kind of wanted all of the voices in my head to go away.
I was angry and depressed.
Total darkness.
I just felt desperate.
You should just be dead.
You're by yourself.
I was alone.
Nobody loves you.
It came crashing down.
I just wanted a way out.
When tomorrow starts without me, and I'm not there to see, if the sun should rise and find your eyes all filled with tears for me, I wish so much you wouldn't cry the way you did today, while thinking of the many things we didn't get to say. I know how much you love me, as much as I love you, and each time that you think of me, I know you'll miss me too. But when tomorrow starts without me, please try to understand that an angel came and called my name and took me by the hand and said my place was ready in heaven far above, and that I'd have to leave behind all those I dearly love. But as I turned to walk away, a tear fell from my eye. For all my life, I'd always thought I didn't want to die. I had so much to live for, so much left yet to do. It seemed almost impossible that I was leaving you. I thought of all the yesterdays, the good ones and the bad. I thought of all the love we shared and all the fun we had. If I could relive yesterday, just even for a while, I'd say goodbye and kiss you, and maybe see you smile. But then I fully realized that this could never be, for emptiness and memories would take the place of me. And when I thought of worldly things I might miss come tomorrow, I thought of you, and when I did, my heart was filled with sorrow. I promised no tomorrow, but today, well, all was lost, and since each day is the same, there's no longing for the past. You have been so faithful, so trusting, and so true, though there were times you did some things you knew you shouldn't do. So when tomorrow starts without me, don't think we're far apart, for every time you think of me, I'm right here in your heart.
I'm Yvonne Bergen, and today I'm going to be diving into what survival really means, not just being alive, but choosing to live. So in this episode, I'll share my story as a suicide survivor and growing up in a loving but broken home, where I was struggling with abuse, grief, and loss, and how I've been taking the time to learn the importance of being a survivor. So I come from a two-parent household, Christian household, so it is a religious background. And I was raised by my mother and my father. My father was struggling with PTSD. They were struggling with anxiety. They both did the best that they could to love me and my sister. My father had two sons that was raised in the household with me as well. And so my dad was put out at the age of 13. He wasn't given the best love. He wasn't given the best support. And so he passed that same trauma down to me and my brothers and sisters. And that made me feel neglected. It made me feel unlovable. And so I would act out by, you know, isolating myself from friends and school. And just, I wasn't able to get the proper love that I needed or wanted. I was getting love from my mom. My mom and my dad got a divorce when I was in the fifth grade. And so when I came home one day and my mom's things were gone, the first thing my dad said was, "Your mom left you and your sister." And because I was young, I believed that my mom left me. But when I was able to start visiting my mom where she was living at, she explained to me and my sister, "I didn't leave you and your sister. I left your father. And he told me I couldn't take y'all." And so when she told me that, it changed how I looked at my dad, because I couldn't believe him anymore. Really, I didn't know who or what to believe. I was taught two different things. Now, being the fact that I'm raised in two different households because my parents weren't in the same household anymore from sixth grade and up. And so church pushed me away because they condemned suicide. They made it seem as if I had a demon or that I was going to go to hell because I wanted to commit suicide. When that wasn't right to tell a little girl, because if I wasn't strong enough, I could have committed suicide. I needed compassion. I needed love. And I remember my first drink was given to me from a family member at the age of 14. And so by the time I was 16 and 17, I found myself going to house parties and drinking socially. Once I became 18 years old, I was drinking by myself individually at home. And I understand that it was a coping mechanism, but it was an unhealthy coping mechanism. It was for me to try to get the pain to stop because of the trauma that I was dealing with. And when all I was doing was masking my pain. All because I felt neglected. I felt unloved. I felt hopeless. I was introduced to Community Coalition by a good friend of mine, Kadir, when I was, I want to say 14, about 15. And so Community Coalition gave me mentors. It gave me hope in a way. It gave me family. And so I came across a mentor named Tylo. And one day I was having a suicide ideation because someone didn't want to be with me. And I called Tylo and I was crying. But I had a knife in my hand. And I knew I didn't really want to end my life. I just wanted the pain to stop. So when I called Tylo and I cried to her, I don't remember exactly what she said, But whatever it was, I was able to calm down, go to sleep, but I was crying myself to sleep. And she told me to put the knife away. And so I put it under my pillow, and I woke up the next morning, and I just remembered I was still alive. I was still here. And so ever since that day, Tylo had worked with me. She had mentored me. She helped me realize I had low self-esteem. She had me write out all the different flaws that I didn't like about myself in red on one full page. And then on that full page, she wanted me to go back and write everything that I loved about myself in black. And I didn't realize she was helping me build a relationship with myself. She was helping me build self-love instead of me seeking it from these relationships or me seeking it from my father at home. And so in 2019, I was introduced to TRP. I was also introduced to Crime Survivor Safety and Justice. And so Philip Rock worked with me at TRP, helping me go to college and find what I wanted to do. And I was just finding myself. I was finding community. I was finding hope. My mom worked at TRP, so that was how I met Philip Rock. My mom also, which her name is Catherine Clark Perkins, she introduced me to Crime Survivor Safety and Justice. And that was the first platform where I was able to, number one, see what I was a survivor of. And I realized, like, wait, I might be a suicide survivor because I've tried to commit suicide a whole bunch of times and I still struggle with it to this day. So then I started resonating with the term suicide survivor. And so my mom was introducing me to all of these groups. One in particular, Share Self-Help. And really, it's ShareSelfHelp.org, where they have all these free support groups, all these programs, free everything, but for recovery and for help. And I realized that it's not a one-day thing. My healing is a everyday, day-to-day healing journey. A journey is continuous. A destination stops. And I realized I can't just stop at one place or one thing. I have to keep going. And so I'm grateful to Share. I'm grateful to CSSJ. I'm grateful to TRP. And I'm most definitely grateful to Community Coalition. And so I remember going to ARC, ARC one day. I believe I was 18 years old. And that was the first time that I realized I needed help, therapeutic help, support, you know, groups, just somewhere where I can start talking and finding my voice. And I was turned away because I was told I had never been incarcerated before. And I asked my mom, like, so do I need to go commit a crime in order for me to get help? And she said, no, baby. No, we are going to find a place for you to get help without you having to commit a crime. And so that was when my mom, Catherine Clark Perkins, introduced me to Bernard Cooper. He has a group called AORP. And so I think it's like affiliates and for non-offenders, for offenders. It's basically like where he has these support groups teaching his curriculum that he came up with while he was in prison dealing with all of these things. And so for once, I felt heard. For once, I felt supported. And so my mom started taking my sister and I, right along with my friend, to these groups with AORP. And so that was a place where I was able to be a survivor and not feel bad about it. And not feel like I have to be somebody else in order to be heard. And so I learned that survival has given me authority within myself, within who I am, to be able to be in these different spaces, to be able to help others without having a title. And so also TRP helped me create some vision boards, create some positive self-affirmation, sticky notes. And so now what I do to this day is I look in the mirror and I tell myself I'm beautiful. I tell myself I'm important and I'm loved. I build that relationship with God. I pray every single day. I'm still in support groups. I'm still in peer groups. I realize therapy is an ongoing thing. When I was in middle school, I knew something was wrong mentally because I told my mom. And so when we looked up all these different terms for mental illnesses, and we came across the words bipolar, anxiety, depression, PTSD. I resonated with PTSD and bipolar before I was actually diagnosed with PTSD and bipolar at the age of 21 when I first started taking therapy. And I'm grateful to God that I did have to leave the church in order to get the mental help that I needed, right along with the spiritual help that I needed. I do believe that faith and mental health go together hand in hand. And so I'm ongoing day by day, learning how to love myself, learning how to build up my self-esteem. Because survival to me is more than just me waking up breathing. It's me rebuilding my life day by day. And I realized that healing comes from more than just community. It's an internal thing. And so I got into my first serious relationship in 2020, right? And that's because I was looking for love because I wasn't getting it at home from my dad. And this relationship was with a masculine woman who was going through mental things and pretending to be a man. And so because she was dealing with the battle internally, I believe that that's why she would like come home and inflict the abuse on me. First, it started off verbally in the beginning of the years together, and I didn't really pay no mind to it. But later on in the relationship, once it started, you know, down the line in the years, once it started to become abusive physically, I then realized I could no longer be in that relationship. I could no longer live with or in toxicity. I had to detach myself from that person because they said with their words they loved me, but with their actions, it showed that they didn't love me. Because you don't love somebody and then put your hands on them and hurt them until they're, I don't know, dead. It's just like, I don't want to wait, or I didn't want to wait until that person say, I love you, and then end up killing me. You know, I've watched so many domestic violence relationships not make it with the two people being alive. One ends up dead or the other ends up in jail. And I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be dead or in jail. And my mom showed me at a young age, it's okay to leave when it starts to become abusive and it's too toxic. She showed me that when she first left my dad and didn't return back to him. She returned back to me and my sister, but not to that relationship, because she told me, if I didn't leave your father, one of us was going to be dead or in jail. And, you know, me and my sister, we used to laugh and think it was a joke when she would say that. But now when I'm looking up and I'm a domestic violence survivor and I'm looking up and I'm a suicide survivor, I realize it was important for her to leave. You know, it took me a long time to have to say enough is enough. I remember packing my bags and putting them in my car and then going back in the house and telling myself, okay, I'm a work this out with this person. I'm a try. I'm a do the housewife thing without the ring. I'm a cook. I'm a clean. I'm a do all of this while this person is belittling me, while this person has told me I'm a burden. This person has told me I'm ugly, I'm fat, I'm all these negative things. I started to believe it. And when I didn't want to live anymore by being in that house, I had to leave. Because I felt like I did all this hard work over these years to not get back to this point of wanting to commit suicide, of wanting to end my life. And I want to let everybody know out there that's struggling with not talking about it, that's struggling with the thoughts, to speak to somebody that cares. For me, I would call the 988 hotline, and I felt like somebody cared. I felt like somebody listened to me without judging me. And so I want to pass that number on for anybody out there worldwide that's struggling with the ideation, to call that number, to call 988, and to make the decision to want to live first, and then the other help comes. But I had to make that decision that I want to choose to live. Right now, God has me working with kids right now at a middle school. And I'm under the organization Second Call. Second Call stands for Second Chance at Loving Life Again. And Second Call has given me that chance to love life again. Now working with kids who are struggling with low self-esteem, who are struggling with abuse, who are struggling with grief, not learning or knowing how to deal with negative and bad feelings. Now to the point where I'm 26 years old and I'm taking anger management classes, I'm taking domestic violence classes, I'm taking classes that will help me with my mental, that will help me to be able to keep living, keep going, keep moving, keep growing through pain. I don't want to mask my pain anymore. I want to heal through my pain. I want to grow through my pain. And so for all the people out there that's struggling with it, if you have family members that's struggling with it, please pass on that number, 988. I told myself from here on out, I want to be the change in the world that I want to see. And so I am so grateful to Suave for giving me this chance to be able to share my story on this platform. Thank you to everybody who has tapped in, who's listened, who shared it. You can follow me on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Evolve by Evie _. And if you are located in California and you would like for me and you would like to sponsor me, you can contact me at 323-943-0086. Once again, my name is Yvonne Bergen, and I want to thank everybody for listening to me and my story. Your girl Evie out the building. This episode is dedicated to Tylo, my mentor. I want to thank her so much for investing and pouring into me with self-esteem, with helping me build a relationship with myself and with God and with community. Big shout out to you, Tylo, and big shout out to you, CSSJ, Bernard Cooper, AORP, TRP, and Catherine Clark Perkins. And anybody else that has worked with me or that I've worked with, shout out to you.
Breaking Stigma is produced by Suave Gonzalez, Pulitzer Prize winner, and DBI Media.